Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I have a lot of new subscribers and watchers now, so welcome to my channel if you are new here. This is show number 90 of my Q&A episodes, and as I've mentioned recently, I try not to repeat myself as much as I can. I've answered a lot of questions, average of 5 to 8 questions per episode. And so that's a lot of raw data about Scientology. And you can find the questions listed out on my blog, mncriticalthinking.com, for each episode that I post here on YouTube. I also put a link to this on my blog with the questions that are asked here on the show, and you can do text searches and stuff on those. So I would encourage you to check out my blog and check out those episodes if you have questions for me, so that I don't necessarily get questions I've been asked already in the past, because there's been a lot of data here, and which is not to say that I'm trying to discourage anybody from just firing questions at me. I just want all of you to be aware of the fact that there is a long history here on this channel of answers for you. And there's a lot of data on this channel about Scientology, and there will be more coming in the future. So I actually laid out in my podcast that I posted yesterday some of my plans for the new year, and did a whole retrospective on things that were covered in this last year. And it's really amazing how much, as a creator, I forget that I've posted on, you know, because when you post 3 videos a week, which I do, including my podcast and the Q&A videos and my Thursday videos, I put out a lot of data, and so even I forget sometimes some of the stuff that I've put up. But anyway, I just want you guys to really check out my channel, look at all the stuff that's here, because there's a lot here on this topic. And so with that, Happy New Year, everybody, and let's ring in a great 2017. I've got some good questions this week, so let's go ahead and get to it. Penny Michaud. I know Scientology targets professionals, such as chiropractors and veterinarians, with their business in admin tech. How do these small business people, who are also Scientologists, deal with patients, customers, or even business partners who are reading your blog, watching Leah Remini's Aftermath, or who are simply exposed to what is becoming more and more common knowledge about Hubbard's cult of broken dreams? Surely they can't disconnect from all of them. What if a business partner or patient is 1 degree removed from a Facebook friend who is an open critic? What if a customer's husband watched Going Clear? It's insane to even think it's possible to exert this level of control. I have to believe if this policy were strictly enforced, everyone would be declared. All right, good question, Penny. Now, I've addressed the subject of suppressive people, which is what Scientology call people that they think are antisocial personalities or psychopaths or things like that. And I've talked about this condition called PTSness, or PTS, being a potential trouble source. If you as a Scientologist get connected up with somebody who they think is antagonistic to or against Scientology, then they'll call that person a suppressive person. And they'll, you know, equate that person to somebody who is at the same level as a serial killer or something like that, right? I mean, it's pretty crazy black and white thinking that goes on. But that's really kind of, rather than talking about all that again, here's what I'm going to say on this. Scientologists and members of any destructive cult, actually, you know, live in a bubble world. The information that goes into that bubble is very controlled. It's very, dictatorial level of information control. In fact, you know, Steve Hassan even talks about this in his book on combating cult mind control, where he talks about this bite model, and one of those things is information control, right, as the I in bite. It's required that in order to be in a destructive cult, in order to have a destructive cult, that this be one of the characteristics of it, because if the full truth about the cult leader and the cult itself were known to its members, then most of them would leave. And the cult, of course, doesn't want that. It relies on its members for its, you know, survival through money and resources and time that the members give. So it's incumbent upon the leaders of the cult and the control structures and people in the cult who run that control that they really monitor closely what information is getting to the cult members and how they deal with that information. So you have the problem in the real world where TV, internet, you know, this is we live in an information age now. Information is everywhere and it's very easy to access. It wasn't that way when Hubbard first was doing Scientology in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. There was no internet. There was no easy access to information like there is now. You'd have to go make a trip to the library or, you know, go talk to people or go do things. You couldn't do it all from your home, right? Where we just have so much information available to us now. So it would take a more dedicated effort. So here's how this works, right? Is because they live in this bubble world of, you know, must not, you know, allow certain information to come in, Scientologists actually learn as part of their indoctrination to do their own information control, because you can't have, you know, Big Brother watching you 24/7. I mean, very few people would allow that level of control. So instead, what the leaders and control members of destructive cults learn is to get the members to police themselves. And so what they do is they learn to, you know, shut out people trying to give them information that is counter to or, you know, somewhat against what the information is that they're being fed by the cult. So it's not so much a matter of, you know, the member will have, you know, will somebody will come in and they're Facebook friends with somebody who's an SP. Well, you know, the guy's not necessarily going to know that. And so it might not ever affect him, because if this person doesn't say to the cult member, look, you're part of a destructive cult and I disagree with that and Scientology's crazy. You know, if they don't say that, then the cult member would never know who this person is or what his connections or associations are or that sort of thing. So it might not, you know, be an issue at all. If it becomes an issue, then the cult member knows to, you know, start going into the information control mode where he goes, well, look, you know, we're not going to talk about that. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear anything negative about Scientology. And if it's a, you know, if it's a chiropractor or a doctor or something and his is a patient of his, well, that's a very easy relationship for the doctor to control. The doctor doesn't need to get into his personal life with his patient or his customers or something like that. If it's a business owner or that sort of thing, it's really none of their business one way or the other. So it's fairly, you know, it's fairly easy to control those relationships because it's just, you know, a matter of social dictate that, you know, people can, you know, have their own religion or have their own ideas about things. And you don't really care about that if you're just trying to get some doctor care or, you know, buy dog food from the guy or something like that, right? But if the customer or the person insists on putting forward, you know, anti-Scientology statements or something to this Scientologist, then the Scientologist will begin to feel that he needs to have this person not be connected to him or not have or have him out of his life. And so really, it kind of depends a lot on how much the non-Scientologist is saying and doing and, you know, the Scientologist's, you know, idea or estimation of the relationship. Does the Scientologist feel he really needs this person in his life? If so, he'll try to do a handling on the person. He'll try to get the guy to stop saying those things or stop thinking those things by talking to him about how good Scientology is, telling him how he's had great wins and experiences with it and that sort of thing. Whereas if it's just, you know, somebody that the Scientologist feels he can blow off and not doesn't have to have him in his life or something, then, you know, you're gone. Now, of course, if this is a family member or a close relation or something like that, they might try to do more handlings with the person to get him to, you know, come to, you know, from the Scientologist's point of view, he's going to try to get this person to see that Scientology is really this great thing, which, of course, it's not. And the Scientologist doesn't have the facts on his side. And if he's pressured too much with factual information that he can't argue against, he's going to clam up because that's the only reaction he has left to him. And it's going to be, ah, no, I can't listen to this. And he's going to demand that that person get out of his life, right? because that person threatens, you know, his belief system in Scientology. And of course, Scientology has made it that way, that they've indoctrinated this person into the idea that this is how they have to act. All destructive cults do this, right? So that's basically how it works. So it's not necessarily that Scientology has to put cameras in every, you know, Scientologist's office or home or something. They get the Scientologists to exert their own information control, and that's generally how they control their members. TLC Timbo. Is everyone in charge of PR at Scientology, aka the Office of Special Affairs, ignorant of the reverse effect when they bash former members? To name just a few, Tori Magoo Chrisman, Jason Begay, and Karen De La Carriere, and the more recent attacks aimed at Mike Rinder, Leah Remini, Ron Miscavige, and yourself. You all have an average of 30 years of participation. The Church of Scientology, in its infinite wisdom, has decided to label all of you as losers, immoral, selfish, criminal, the slime of the earth, and so on and so on. I extract and interpret from this practice that 30 years of participation in reaching the highest levels in the various member areas of the organization, along with studying the scriptures / tech, has been ineffective, and therefore Scientology simply does not work. It seems like they are testifying to the failure of their own system and structure. Another foot bullet? Is this their admission, or am I getting it wrong? I would love to hear you elaborate on this topic. Okay, good question. A couple things on this. One, there is the idea in Scientology that when somebody leaves and becomes a critic or becomes very outspoken against Scientology, that that person was always, always bad and evil to the core, but Scientology just missed it. And that doesn't, and to them, the way they translate that is in their heads is that they didn't miss. The person was so sneaky and lying and underhanded and crafty about their deception over all those years that they managed to keep themselves from being found out about. Okay, that's point one. And point two is they are completely unaware of how things in the real world work. Like I just mentioned in my last answer, they're in a bubble world. And that includes the people in the Office of Special Affairs. They have lost touch with reality, obviously. I mean, you know, this is a fairly, you know, it's a pretty harsh statement to make, but it's true. They are out of touch. And they don't have a close connection with the outside world because of that bubble filter system that goes into place. So they don't get that when they are putting out these harsh criticisms against the critics, that they're creating the effect that you're talking about, where people look at that and go, well, then clearly Scientology doesn't work, and these people are a bunch of morons. They're tone deaf to that. And the thing is that they're putting out that criticism and those web pages and the hate sites and that sort of thing, the Who is Leah Remini and Mike Rinder and all those things, those are made not for you. They're made for Scientologists. So here's how this works, right? In the world of Scientology, if Joe Scientologist, you know, is watching, you know, perusing the channels one day and Leah Remini's show comes on, he goes, oh my God, what's this? Scientology in the Aftermath. What? Right? And he sees, you know, Ron Miscavige Sr. or me or Mike or whoever talking about, you know, yeah, I was physically abused and it's destructive and my family was ripped apart. They go, damn, that doesn't sound good, right? They kind of look at that and go, oh my God. They'll go into their church and they'll talk to the ethics officer, right? They'll go and that's who they're going to wind up in front of. And the ethics officer is going to go, oh, you saw Leah Remini's show because you were just channel surfing. Okay, got it. You know, no, you're not in trouble. But let me show you some things that you don't know about those people. And they'll just pull it up right there in that right in front of the guy. They'll say, here's the link. And they'll just show the guy the website, the hate site against that person. Or they will pull out a pack, a whole like binder of information the church has compiled about me, Mike Rinder, Tori, Karen, etc., showing all these horrible, awful things that we have said and done, right? And convincing the Scientologist that we're just evil and always have been, right? So it goes back to that first point. right? We were, it's not that Scientology doesn't work. It's that we are so crafty and evil and horrible that Scientology could never work on us, right? Because Hubbard has various things to say about criminals. And one of the things he said, for example, is that that e-meter that they use doesn't work on criminals, right? Criminals can beat it, right? So, and criminals don't get gains in Scientology. Hubbard says that, right? Hubbard's taking care of all of this stuff. It's a very closed system of logic. And it's very circular, right? Scientology works 100% of the time on every single person it's ever used on, except criminals, because Scientology can't work on criminals because criminals prevent Scientology from working on them. Right? So it all goes back to the criminal, right? It's not Scientology. So it's this whole, you know, closed system of thought. And that's how that works. Matt, I grew up in a somewhat strict religious environment, and I've been studying cult groups since I lost my faith in my early 20s. I've noticed that recently, perhaps in the last few years, that the term brainwashing has fallen very much out of favor and has been replaced with undue influence. Normally, I would roll my eyes at this kind of thing and see it as nothing more than a semantics game, but I actually think it makes sense. Undue influence is far more palatable and is easily contemplated, especially when compared to brainwashing, which frankly has an air of hypnotic bullshit about it. Do you think that the word cult will ever be replaced in the same way brainwashing was? I'm not at all proposing that it should be, but the word itself has an intensely negative connotation and is perceived as being intrinsically combative in nature. The general public only acknowledges a group as a cult when they are as loud and as ugly as the Westboro Baptist Church. Meanwhile, large-scale abuses by the Jehovah's Witness organization and the Mormon Church are largely ignored. I can't help but wonder if these abusive groups would get more media attention if there were a less ham-fisted way to label them. Thanks for all your videos, and I'm curious to hear what you think. Matt, this is a really good question, and actually, in your question, I think, is the answer, because I think that the word cult is an unfortunate word to use because of all of the connotations that have been involved with that word since the Christians actually perverted the use of the word back in the 1920s. There's a whole history to this, and I'm not pointing fingers or blaming or being derogatory toward Christians. I'm saying that that's the derivation of the term. It goes back to, you know, originally cult comes from culture. And it had to do with worship and the land and all kinds of things. I talk about it in one of my videos about is Scientology a cult, right? But the term has now all these negative connotations because of this, you know, twist of its usage back in the 20s, and it's sort of carried forward to now. And I think when I said the answer is in your question, I think the term abusive group is actually probably a really good term to use. But I use the term destructive cult on purpose and for a reason. I don't use the word cult. I use the word or term destructive cult, right? And this is actually something I picked up from Steve Hassan from his book, Combating Cult Mind Control. I think it's, and yes, and Steve is also the one who has pushed, or at least the first one I heard, who was pushing the term undue influence, because I think you're absolutely right. Brainwashing is a really stupid word, and it's lost any, it never really had any sort of scientific sense to it. It's sociologically and culturally and scientifically, it's very hard to say what is brainwashing, right? But undue influence, that's actually, I think, originally a business term, or is used in a business, in legally with businesses, but it has this whole social and cultural connotation with destructive cults. So I think that abusive group might be another term that might eventually be the kind of term, if not abusive group, then maybe something like that, might eventually replace the term destructive cult. But for now, I'm going to keep using destructive cult because, you know, in a way, the negative connotations of that word are used on purpose when we're talking about these groups. And it should be, because these are groups that are destructive. They do harm. And they do fit the idea of a cult, in that there's this idea of an insular, closed off, you know, us versus them, sort of black and white thinking kind of group. That is what a destructive cult is, and that's why I use that term. So, you know, the word cult all by itself can mean anything from, you know, the Catholic Church to, you know, the Westboro Baptists. But when you use the term destructive cult, now we're being a bit more specific about what we're talking about, and that's why I prefer that term. Nelson Anito. Hey Chris, thanks for answering my question a few weeks back. Got another one for you. I saw Battlefield Earth a few weeks ago on Netflix, and it was so rancid that I had to spread out my viewing in 10 to 15 minutes increments over a few days. I read a book reviewer around that time who pointed out a plot element in the story that may reflect Hubbard's view of his followers. The main alien villain, Turl, wants to become rich by mining a gold mine in the Rocky Mountains. I think in the movie it was Fort Knox. Turl recruits the human Johnny Goodboy Tyler to get the gold for him and uses a learning machine or advanced tech to increase Johnny's intelligence so Johnny can be more able to get the gold. I've always thought this was Hubbard's secret message of what he was doing with Scientology, and he left it in plain sight. Has anyone else thought of this before, or have you realized it yourself? I'm amazed it hasn't been talked about more, even though it was in Scientology's one major foray into Hollywood with John Travolta in the starring role. Ugh, Battlefield Earth. Oh my god. Worst movie ever. And not a great book. Okay, my answer to your question is no. I do not believe for an instant that L. Ron Hubbard was leaving a message in plain sight about him knowingly conning his members, or that he knew that that's what he was doing and he was just admitting that to the world. And the reason, there are many reasons I don't think that that's how things are. I've written about it in my book. I have made, you know, videos and talked about this. And probably this, if you want one place where, which would answer the question of why I don't think that, it would be a podcast I did this last year with Yuval Leor about L. Ron Hubbard suffering from temporal lobe epilepsy. It is a theory that Yuval put forward that I absolutely think is valid. And I think Hubbard did suffer from that medical condition. And I think that he absolutely believed in what he was pushing. Now, here's the complexity to Hubbard, though. And I said this in my book, and I've said this other places. He was a con man, and he knew that, too. It's not black and white with Hubbard. He was a complex individual, as most of us are. And he had all kinds of motivations and reasons for his behavior. He did lie through his teeth. He was a pathological liar. But he was also a person who believed. I think he told so many lies that he started to believe them himself, especially as he advanced in age. I think when he was younger, he knew he was kind of full of shit, and he was just telling stories because it got him popular and it made him, you know, in with the ladies and that sort of thing, and it got him by in a number of situations. So he had this condition. Then TLE comes along, right? Because it wasn't like he was born with that. And that, you know, that created a religious fervor within him where he truly believed that he had an insight into mankind and how people think and operate that he was convinced was a bigger revelation than, you know, what's in the Bible. And he wrote this book, Excalibur. And then that became, you know, eventually mutated into Dianetics, and then that evolved into Scientology. And Hubbard was a con man extraordinaire. He was horrible with money. He ripped people off left, right, and center. He was an unapologetic lady, you know, person. I mean, he was married to two women at the same time. I mean, this guy had lots and lots of problems. So that's why I say he's a very complex person and his motivations were complex. But when it comes to what he was doing with Scientology, right, he really did believe in what he was doing and he really did have this idea that he was helping people. As crazy as some of his ethics and the justice and the disconnection and the abuses and stuff that he engaged in, and they were unforgivable and they were awful. Yet at the same time, he had this inner core belief that what he was doing was really salvaging mankind. And he really believed in all the space stuff and everything else, right? There's just no way he could have lived the life that he lived if he didn't believe it, right? He was not just pulling everyone's chain and laughing to the bank the whole time. It was more than that. So, and eventually, of course, he descended into utter madness, and he died, alone, afraid, and crazy person in the 80s. So that's kind of a, real fast take on L. Ron Hubbard and why I believe that's not what was a hidden message embedded in Battlefield Earth. I think it's just coincidence or somebody looking at that and going, oh, well, that fits to my view of how L. Ron Hubbard is. And so therefore, it looks like it, Hubbard probably knew about it too. No, I don't subscribe to that particular idea. Leo Taxel. Hi, Chris. I heard your comment that if Scientology were a country, it would be exactly like North Korea. I think that comparison is eerily accurate. There are pictures of LRH everywhere in Scientology orgs, just like portraits of the Kim family are plastered around North Korea. The RPF seems identical to a gulag or labor camp like in North Korea. Also, Scientology's use of the Chinese school method comes to mind. It makes one wonder if LRH wasn't just intimately familiar with Soviet government and copied-pasted it onto his organization. The lack of or discouragement of open internet use in both is another parallel, and many, many more I can think of I won't waste your time with. My question relates to this. I noticed that ideal orgs opened up in Japan, Taiwan, and Moscow recently, but not South Korea. Maybe it's just coincidence, but I was wondering if maybe it never gained a foothold there because the citizens would quickly realize the parallels to North Korea, and it would cause terrible PR for the church. What are your thoughts on this as it relates to South Korea? And your thoughts as to whether or not LRH copied his platform from communist authoritarianism as a whole. Okay, first off, let's talk about Hubbard copying, authoritarianism. I don't think that Hubbard knowingly, purposefully did that for some of the reasons I just laid out in an earlier answer as to, Hubbard's fervent belief in what he was doing. I think Hubbard did not understand or could not organize his way out of a wet paper bag. He was not a good businessman. He was not a good financier. He was not at all good at organizational structure. I've done a whole video about how bad the whole organizational structure of Scientology is and laid it all out in grim detail. I think Hubbard had a lot of help, namely his wife Mary Sue and others who came along and figured out how to make this organization work. And Hubbard then laid his own, sort of ideas on top of this, which have a great degree of unworkability and have not at all contributed to Scientology's expansion over the last 30 or 40 years. I think that there is a similarity between destructive cult practices and communism and authoritarianism because they have to, if they're going to succeed and if they're going to continue, they must build in certain structures and put a framework there that acts to control the thinking and actions of their members. And there are only so many ways that you can build a framework to do that. So, communist authoritarianism, 1984, Big Brother dictatorships, Venezuelan dictatorships, North Korea, and Scientology and Jim Jones and these groups have similarities between them from one to the next that you can look at and point at, and because you have to have those structures in place in order to exert the level of control you want over your membership. You have to have a police system. You have to have a justice system which enforces the needs of the state over the needs of the individual. You have to have enforcement arms. You have to have information control. You have to have behavior control. You have to have undue influence and ways of behavior modification in order to draw people into the situation and control them once they are in it, right? All of these structures have to be in place to exert the level of control that these organizations want to exert. So rather than looking at communism or North Korea or Venezuela or Big Brother and go, well, did Hubbard get his ideas from those things? I don't know that it was really that simple. I think it was more that Hubbard evolved a system of authoritarian control because that was Hubbard's megalomania in full swing. And he wanted to exert that level of control over his membership because that's what he thought it took in order to make his technology work. I mean, that's what Hubbard said about it himself. He said, I don't like heavy ethics. I don't like enforced justice, but I have to put these things in place because man is so screwed up that we have to enforce this level of control on him in order to guide him along this path that leads to total personal spiritual freedom and salvation. So it was pretty twisted thinking, sure, but that was Hubbard's rationale behind it. And so he evolved systems of control like these other systems. Now, as far as South Korea and North Korea go, here's why I have to honestly tell you, I don't know anything about South Korea at all. I've never even met somebody from South Korea. I've never looked into their system of government or their culture. So I can't honestly tell you why it is that Scientology hasn't encroached into South Korea. I doubt, though, because I maybe don't know South Korea, but I do know human nature. And we all have things in common, right? And I think one of the things that we all have in common is cognitive biases and cognitive dissonance and the ability to be fooled by people who wield undue influence and propaganda against us. That's human beings, right? So I don't think South Korea is any more immune to any of that than any place else. I don't think they're so experienced with North Korea as a destructive cult situation that they're immune to Scientology or other, you know, religious groups or destructive cult groups coming in there with some good PR pitch and, you know, getting them to get on board. There's always a certain percentage of people in any group who will literally believe anything you tell them. So that's, you know, maybe a slightly pessimistic view, but I think it's a realistic one. So I think that, you know, South Korea has not, you know, been invaded by Scientology, so to speak, because nobody in Scientology has bothered to get to them yet. In the same way, Montana hasn't been invaded by Scientology yet because nobody in Scientology is going to Montana and bothering to do the work, right? That's really what it comes down to. So I think that's a more realistic appraisal of that situation. It's Flash Answers time. Jack Linton, from the films, videos, and photos I have seen, it appears that the Church of Scientology is almost exclusively white / Caucasian. Is this correct? And if so, do you have any idea why? No, I don't know that it's exclusively white. I mean, there are church branches in Latin America and all over Europe, Australia, you know, Taiwan. So, no, it's not exclusively white or Caucasian, although I think it's majorly white or Caucasian because of the economics of Scientology and because of the fact that Scientology targeted, I think, white affluent males and white affluent families through the 50s, 60s, and 70s as their, you know, as probably one of their primary, well, through the 50s and 60s, I would say. In the 70s, they started going into colleges and things like that. And I think that's when you started seeing more diversity in Scientology's demographics. So that's my short answer to that. Eric Husted. In Scientology in the Aftermath, Leah Remini and Mike Rinder refer to Scientology as the church and Scientologists as parishioners. Do members of Scientology really believe that they are parishioners in a church? Do you believe Scientology is a church? Obviously, you can't speak for Leah or Mike, but do you think that they believe Scientology is a church? Are Leah and Mike doing this out of habit? I find their use of these terms to be jarring. It seems to me that they have willingly ceded rhetorical high ground to Scientology by referring to it as the church. Thanks in advance for any thoughts you have on this. I actually spent quite a bit of time in my book talking about whether Scientology is a religion or not, or whether it should be called a church. I don't happen to look at it that way. However, there are plenty of people who do. And because Scientology is recognized in the courts and by the IRS as an officially sanctioned religion, it's not improper to call it the Church of Scientology or refer to its members as parishioners. And that's pretty much the reason why people do that, right? There is a great effort being made to get its tax exemption revoked, or at least there's a great, you know, a lot of people who'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see some more effort in that direction. And that would be good, right? But Scientology has also been recognized by courts as a valid religious, enterprise. So until that gets revoked, we kind of have to refer to it that way because that's kind of how it's recognized. I just happen to think that that's a farce and that they use religious cloaking. But I still use that terminology, and I think Leah and Mike do as well, because that's how you talk about Scientology. So, you know, you'd be derailing the argument about its human rights abuses and the things that it does to make a stand about whether or not it's a church or not. And I think that's the main reason that Leah and Mike and others, such like myself included, do not make that the central issue, right? If we start talking about Scientology is not a valid religion, then we're going to have an argument about that. We don't want to have an argument about that. What we want to talk about is the fact that whether it's a church or not, this is an abusive group that does horrible things to people, and it should not be supported in any way. And that's the position that needs that we're talking from. So that might be one explanation for why that those terms are used. LKJLASDC. Chris, I was just listening to the year-end Shrine Gala that Tony Ortega posted, and Miscavige, throwing out the crazy expansion stats, said a new clear was made every 90 minutes. That's 16 per day. Yet in everything I read about the cult, I see stuff about clearing the planet being such an important goal. So what are members thinking when they hear something like that that indicates, despite all the other expansion stats, that they're falling behind since the planet is growing much faster than they're clearing it? Is it one of those cognitive dissonance things they simply try not to think about? How do they reconcile it? Honest truth, they don't think about it at all. To them, that 16 clears a day sounds really impressive. They don't do fact-checking. They don't do the math. They don't let themselves go there because that would, if they started doing that, then they would start thinking for themselves and they would start questioning what's going on around them. And the people in Scientology can't afford to let themselves do that. It's just another aspect of how the church, you know, controls them, but also a statement of how they control themselves. It's just part of how that all goes together. So, when I was in the church, if we heard 16 clears a day, it was like, ooh, wow, that's a lot. You know, we wouldn't then do the math and go, oh, but there are, 7.5 billion people on Earth. And it was actually, there are a number of things that contributed to me leaving, and starting to do the math was one of them. there were a lot of things that I started breaking out of that mind control shell think. And that was one of those things when those statistics didn't make any sense to me anymore. So it is a point of them breaking free of it when they start doing that math. But for the most part, the people who are in the church won't let themselves go there. Okay, everybody. So again, Happy New Year. Thank you for coming around. Please put any questions, comments, or feedback in the comment section of this video. I will see all of it. And I try to respond to most of it as my time allows. Thanks very much for your questions. Thank you for coming around and listening to what I have to say. And I will see you guys next week.